guys. And today I'm going to talk with Haley Davis, an accent professional in my Accent Teachers Academy, who is also from the East Coast of the U.S., well, the East Side of the U.S., like me, but she's way more South than I was. So she's the perfect candidate to talk about how there's actually no such thing as the American accent, and how all accents are just collections of habits and skills, and that can carry a story, but also can carry baggage. You'll even hear her describe what a cornbread accent sounds like. So now let's get on with the show. I'm Bianca, your personal American accent coach, and I'm here to help you master an American accent in English because your voice is your choice when it comes to how you sound. And by the way, if you want to see the full video of the episode, it's available at Accent Coach Bianca on YouTube. And so you should really subscribe to whatever podcast platform you use so that you don't miss the newest episode. Now, let's get on with the show. Haley, my friend, we're back together again. It's so good to see you, as always.
It's good to see you.
And I see you, well, I see you almost every week because you're in the Teachers Club, but we've been doing podcast episodes fairly regularly. And I think we keep saying like, oh, we got to do an episode about that. Oh, we got to do an episode about that. And this was kind of perfect timing because I know it's not new, but I was watching one of the prequels to Yellowstone. And I wanted to ask you if you had seen it, because in the prequel, it's called 1883. I think it's the first of many prequels. But one of the main characters, the woman, well, the family, I should say, the family was moving from Tennessee, moving out west, you know, going on the Oregon Trail. And I thought, oh, this is so interesting. It's a young woman from Tennessee in the late 1800s. And I was really noticing how she was speaking. And I thought, oh, this might be interesting to you. So originally we were going to talk about that. And then we ended up talking about 100 other things. And so we thought, let's just use that as a starting off point. And I think maybe that's related because of like the idea of the Oregon Trail in our history and the, you know, the country is so vast and things like that. And that got us really starting to talk about just like the accent plural versus singular and what that kind of means. So what was your like original jumping off point here when we were going to talk about this?
Yeah, I think, you know, we are always talking about what we're going to talk about when we press record, but then what actually ends up happening is completely different, but that's just kind of how we both function.
We'll do all of it. Exactly. Yeah. It's about the experience.
Yes. Yeah. I think one of the things we were talking about was I was asking questions about how my accent comes off because, of course, a lot of people are wanting to learn English, wanting to learn the American accent. But I think it helps to have an awareness of what your own accent sounds like.
Yeah, third-party perspective. Totally.
But also, that's one of the things that comes up a lot is this, I want to learn the American accent. I want to understand the American accent. Mm-hmm. Sounds really pretty, right? That sounds really noble and good. But there's a problem with that. It's that there isn't an American accent.
No such thing, people. Yeah, surprise. If anybody didn't already know this, and I think a lot of people do, but we want to talk more about it, is like, there's no such thing as the American accent. I know that's what's kind of sold to us, you know, and what we really mean by that is kind of like a generalization of what do most people say most of the time in these, you know, contexts, right? In these phonological contexts or in this, let's say register, right? Register meaning how casual is it? How formal is it, right? When do we say this? Most of us, most of the time, when do we say these things? So really it's an ideal in a way, but you started bringing up too the idea of like a certain view that even native speakers would have, like from news reports and things like that, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. So typically when you are trying to learn the American accent, there, well, see, that's the frustration with it is I think people really do think that there's just the American accent. Even the teleprompters, the newscasters in the United States who are native speakers, they have to shift their accent and learn a new, more neutral I'm putting the quotations up with my fingers very strongly because having a neutral accent, that still
doesn't exist.
But yeah, you get into this, okay, well, I want to learn more of the northern accent or I want to learn the southern accent. That's not wrong. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. That can be great for your job, you know, or diversifying what you're listening to. But the problem with that is that there's not just one Southern accent, one Northern accent. Like, take the size of England right now, okay? Mm-hmm. It's a decently sized country, right? And mm-hmm. so there are more Northern accents, Western, Eastern, Southern. Okay, England is the size of Iowa, which is
one state, guys.
State in the
For
United
people States. Who don't know, Iowa's a state. It's not a particularly large state, right? Actually, no. I have a friend who lives here in Mexico close to me, and she's from Iowa. And so I think it's very interesting that you say that, because I can picture the size and shape of Iowa in my head. Of course, the population is very different, but one of our states is the same size as England, as we said. And I think, didn't we say?
We actually have 11 states that just that single state size is the entire size of the UK.
Right. All of UK, not just England. Like, exactly.
All of UK. So not England. All of UK is the same size as 11 different single states, just that single state. So why does that matter? Why do we care about that? Why is that relevant?
Right.
Because that means there's easily 20 different variations. Exactly. It's not bad when people say, oh, I want to learn the American accent. I want to understand Northerners, or I want to understand Southerners. But the question is, which Northerners, which mm-hmm. Southerners?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of history behind those variations in languages. There's a lot of perspectives and opinions about them. But mm-hmm. there's also wild differences. A person from Alabama mm-hmm. does not sound the same as a person from Louisiana. Yes, they sound similar, and they're probably mm-hmm. going to use more similar words than a Louisiana person and a Michigan person. Mm-hmm. They're different. And so, I think there's this assumption that, okay, my country, there's, 6 to 10 accent variations, all with speaking the same language. I'm just talking about native speakers who are monolingual. Yeah, so there's a geographical component that I think needs to be reminded.
It's easy to remember in the UK and in England how it's such a smaller place. I think we said it, the landmass of the US is 40 times the size of the UK, right? And I think what people kind of remember is that, oh, the UK is kind of a small place and there's so many accents within that. Absolutely, absolutely. And so they think, well, by comparison, oh, the U.S. is so big, it's kind of all just one homogenized thing. But just to remind people, that's really not the case. Like you said, often it's south versus north, or city versus rural, or coast, versus more landlocked areas, mountainous versus plains kind of thing, right? It could be geography, it could be place. It could also be, by the way, economical too, right? Like we have within the same city, or racial as well. There's so many different ways we can slice, this accent pie up and talk about those things, because I think it's super interesting. And this all came about too, because you're a native speaker, I'm a native speaker from the US, like we're from different areas. And I think something that happened was I knew somebody from the same area, and I was like, oh yeah, I can tell where you're from, but I personally might not be able to say, oh, this is, like you said, Louisiana and this is Tennessee, or this is West Virginia and this is Tennessee. Like I wouldn't be able to do that because I'm kind of farther removed from that. Yes, with like what I do and my training and things, I think I could hear differences, but I wouldn't be able to put those patterns together and then label them as, oh, this person is from this place. Like you might be able to, because that's kind of more the area you're from. You know what I mean?
That's a good point. Well, and I don't live very far from where I grew up. It's in a different state, but I'm still regionally in the same part of the country. And so when we were chatting, you were referencing, oh, it sounds like you have a Tennessean accent.
Right.
Your voice sounds a little Tennessean. And I had a lot of feelings come up from that because, well, for a lot of reasons. First off, Tennessean accent isn't, generally speaking, considered a good thing.
Uh-huh.
And that's the thing that I think people forget is just like in Spain and just like in England and just like in China, there are different opinions about the people who speak a certain way. That is the exact same in the United States. I mean, we see that all the time with non-native speakers and their accents, right? So it's the same with native speakers as well. So kind of hearing someone say, oh, you sound like you might be Tennessean or you live in Tennessee. I was a little shocked because I'm also around people who have a much stronger accent. I tend to not express that accent as strongly. So I kind of thought, oh, it's a little more suppressed. People don't hear it unless I turn it on. And we were able to quickly recognize, oh, it just sounds like it's that region. And I was just a little shocked because I think part of the goal with accent training is for people to not be able to guess where you're from. I think that's kind of the beauty of getting your communication even clearer and more concise and more structured, is that you have the flexibility to out yourself, your upbringing, and you have the choice to not disclose that.
Exactly.
So I was I felt a little violated when you were able to diagnose, okay, you're not from Tennessee, but I've lived here a considerable amount of time.
Yeah.
Where I'm from. One of the things I did once you told me that was I started listening to these voice clips that are recorded on a site that has accents of people all over the world and in different parts of their country. So it's called IDEA, like
IDEA. That's the name of the website, IDEA. It's called the International Dialects, plural, Dialects of English Archive. So it's this amazing tool that's online where you can hear people, you can hear clips, right? And it originally started back, there's this guy, Paul Mayer, and he has a wonderful podcast called In a Manner of Speaking. And I found that through his podcast. And originally, like some of the older clips, you'll hear people just kind of talking about their day or, you know, what their grandma used to make for dinner, that kind of thing. But then when you hear newer clips, you'll hear they're kind of more standardized, right? So what used to happen in linguistics, for example, I think it's University of Pennsylvania, they used to have this van that would drive around, right? I think this was in the 70s, and they would drive around and they had recording equipment. They would kind of stop people on the street and say, hey, can we get a sample of you just talking? And that's where a lot of these original recordings come from. And I think it's really amazing. But now
we have recording, but they have two parts of the recordings. I've listened to several. So the first part is scripted where the person is reading a story. So if you think, you know, of comma gets a cure or the rainbow passage. It's not necessarily the exact same story, but you can, if you listen to 10 different voice recordings, you'll notice, oh, they're all reading the same passage. One of them is about this goose who goes on this chase and you're like, okay,
why am I reading this story? Yeah, it's just because it's got all the sounds of English in it, right? And it's a newer version of the other one, the rainbow passage.
They did this on purpose so that they could hear all of the sounds. But here's the thing. When the person is reading aloud the passage, they don't sound the same as when they are speaking just casually. They might sound very similar, but a lot of people, at least in the United States, at least with American English, when we read, we kind of clean up our voice and that cleanup looks like whatever our definition of cleaning up is. Oh, I need to make my accent sound more proper in this part. I need to enunciate more here. It doesn't mean they're doing it the same way. You can tell that the reader, when they're speaking, they're cleaning up their accent. They'll change how they say a word, even in the recording. And then if you skip 2 minutes later and you hear them talking, you see, oh, they are saying words a little differently. Actually, they're saying them really differently because they're not in a script. I think this is part of why it's not bad to use a script when you're working on accent training, but you want to make sure some of your training is just speaking, just conversation.
Yeah, completely spontaneous. Yeah. And it goes back to one or two things that we mentioned earlier. And one is that there's preconceived notions, right? There's biases, there's prejudices, both positive and negative. And there's this preconceived notion of like, oh, how should I speak? Or how do I want to sound? Because I'm kind of doing a performance, I'm reading this thing out loud. And then the other thing that you mentioned earlier was habits, right? And like how we speak is a collection of habits often. So I think, let's talk a little bit more about the habits that we might have and your experiences.
Yeah, I would say, you know, if you are comparing American English just generally from all the cities and all the states to another language, then sure, Northerners are going to sound basically the same maybe as Southerners. But one of the things that you'll notice is that Northerners tend to speak a little more precisely or a little more quickly. Some might define it as quickly. Their jaw or their mouth might be a little tighter. And we know that in American English, the vowel sounds are extremely long, easily three times as long as all the other languages, because mm-hmm. it's just, that's kind of how we have a lot of diphthongs. That's just how our language works. But where you're really going to hear the diphthongs, where you're really going to hear the wave and all the vowels, is in the Southern accents. So an example would be, yes. I was listening to these archived voice recordings on idea.org. And so somebody in Massachusetts or Connecticut, they were saying, that doesn't bother me. That doesn't bother me. That doesn't bother me. It's like, I don't know. And so they were speaking in this a little quicker way. And then some of the Southern people were saying, that's like, I don't think it bothers me. There was a shift mm-hmm. in how quickly their mouth changed the sound. So mm-hmm. they were making the same sounds a lot of the times, but it was mm-hmm. how quickly they did. Their intonation was mm-hmm. a little different too. So I think mm-hmm. what happens with this is, you know, you were saying that a lot of the colleges that started in the United States were in the Northeast. Yes. And so there was this idea back in the day that the Northern voice was the educated one, because mm-hmm. had to live in the North, at least for a portion of your life, so that mm-hmm. you could go to college. Mm-hmm. And that's still prevalent today. That's part of why I was a little thrown off when you said, oh, you sound Tennessean, because there is this idea of you can't be educated and sound Southern. You have to kind of mute your voice.
Prejudice.
I think you should be able to speak clearly, but yeah. I don't think you should have to suppress how you live or how you express yourself, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, it's yeah. a horrible prejudice. Yeah. And let's face it, like, it's the world over. Like you said, it's in whatever country, pretty much very often, it's often north-south lines are drawn. I don't know if this is true down in Australia or New Zealand, but generally, often in the north, I guess because the educational institutions are there, a northern accent is considered more aspirational very often, right? And so that happens a lot too. But the funny thing is, I don't know, you probably know this, I'm a big Doctor Who fan. I love science fiction. And the old black and white Doctor Who, which I grew up on, and then when they did this reboot, like, I don't even remember how long it was. It was a while ago already, like, I want to say 20 years ago. The first new ones came out, and this Doctor Who for the first season was this guy named Christopher Eccleston, right? And this was back, let me set the scene. This was back when Netflix was a mail delivery DVD service.
The 1900s?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Way back, horse and buggies would deliver my Netflix. And for people who don't know, yeah, Netflix started out as you'd make a list on the Netflix website and you would get whatever DVDs came up next, right? And so I would wait for my new Doctor Who DVDs.
Send it to you in the mail.
In the mail, yes. Right. In the mail, yes. We returned ours, in the mail. There were also maybe drop boxes too, but I think that came later. Yeah, I would have return postage already paid, right? If for people who remember what postage was. Anyways, I digress. So I was watching this for the first time, this new Doctor Who, and I remember that the character, well, the actor, Christopher Eccleston, he was from the North, and they kind of played it into the character because the companion says to him, hey, you're an alien, so why do you sound like you're from the North? This is, of course, a British show, so for them, the North is not where London is, which is in the South, so that could have been taken as kind of prejudicial. Oh, you're from the North, right? And I loved his response. His response was, well, lots of planets have a north. So yes, I'm an alien, but I also have an accent, right? Which I loved so much. And I still remember to this day.
I think it's really right what you said earlier, which is that an accent is a collection of habits. The way you speak, but it's also the way the people speak around you. How do they talk? Because that's mm-hmm. what you're being exposed to all mm-hmm. the time. And so a lot of times people say, I want to fix my accent. I want to get rid of my accent. And I think, well, it's just a skill. It's a habit, yeah. uh-huh. you know, and especially if it's your native language, it's a mm-hmm. reflection of where you're from to some extent. Mm-hmm. So building the skill to sound differently is great, but I don't mm-hmm. think that needs to take place of where you're from or anything.
Exactly. Like that. Yeah. It's got a lot of, like we were saying earlier, accents in general. They have history, they have baggage, they have a story to tell, you know, and the person too, which is awesome. But I don't want to tell anybody else what to do either. Like you said earlier, I think you want to be able to code switch and go from one accent to another based on what you need at the time, right? Maybe in some situations, like, this doesn't feel good to me, or I don't like how I might be treated, so I want to back off this sound, or I want to do something else, you know? And so I think we can all learn the skill of being able to choose whatever fits our needs best, you know, during that time. And to me, it's, like you said, it's a skill, right? It's something you can learn.
I think it's definitely a skill, and I think it's a skill worth building. Obviously, I don't think it's the worst thing to do because I help people for a living, but right. I don't think it's, in my head, I don't view building more accent awareness or building your ear training, doing ear training. I don't view those things as fixing your voice. No. It's more just helping you speak more clearly, more confidently. Because to me, it's about communication. So if your accent is getting in the way of you doing your job, having fun, living your best life. Yes, it's worth considering building more skills in your tool belt, you know? But if it's just, oh my goodness, you know, I think accents are bad. Everyone has an accent. Whatever accent training you're doing is building your skills to speak in another accent. It's just a way of speaking.
Exactly. If you have a mouth and you use it to speak. Actually, no, let me rewind that. Even for signed languages, there's still accents, right? We still see
writing. Even for writing, if we talk about how does, you know, maybe Harry Potter was big at one point, Hunger Games was big at one point. If you think about even romance novels, there's a style of writing that the author is doing. That's kind of an accent, okay?
It's personality.
And recognizing, you know, everyone is going to experience prejudices. Some going to experience way more. And obviously, we want to do everything we can to mitigate and right those situations. And we also want to keep surviving where we're at. Yeah, I think there can be both.
There's prejudices, there's privileges, you know, we've all got a mix of these things. A lot of times they're completely subconscious or unconscious, and we're often not even aware that they're there until something happens. So I think what we were saying earlier is, okay, what's the main takeaway? If this is a habit and a skill, what I like about it is I just find it interesting, right? I'm like, oh, very interested in how people speak and, you know, what are the factors that influence them? And I just find it really interesting how that relates to culture and history and how we said, you know, all of those things. And for me, it's an interesting skill to build, not only for English and what I do, but like for me in Spanish, right? For me in French or in Arabic, right? Like I sometimes want to fit in as much as possible. And sometimes, like, I don't care if I stick out because I'm never going to fit in, you know, I'm just not going to pass. Ever. So sometimes that's fine, but being able to pick and choose, I think, is the empowerment that we like to give people. And what you mentioned earlier, I think before we started recording, I want to bring it back up again, because you work a lot with families. I had read an article that said that the kind of Southern accent is disappearing a bit among young people. And you mentioned this thing about cornbread accent, which I had not heard before. So maybe you can describe what that is for people listening.
Yes. So the algorithm looks different for every person, correct? It looks different for every person, right? On my native English speaker, I live in the South, but I am pretty well educated woman, you know, all of those things. One of the reels that kept popping up was, hey, how do I take out the cornbread in my kid's accent? Okay, well, let's start with the basic. They're using cornbread as a metaphor. They're not saying there's literally cornbread in the child's voice. They're saying cornbread as in this is a huge Southern staple. You know, cornbread, you eat it with beans, pinto beans that's like cooked the night before. This is a very rural dish, especially if you're thinking low income, poor, maybe farmer family. So they're referencing a way of life and a region of the States. Okay. And they're saying, how do I take out the cornbread, this Southern experience, this dialect? So the example that they said was they were asking the 4 or 5 year old, okay, what's the cold little cubes that are in your water? And she said, ass, which is not a body part. It's Ice.
Which is not the thing behind my glasses. Those are my eyes. Right. Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, the notion was they were making light of it. They were saying, oh, this is so funny. My kid's accent is so strong. But yeah. Part of the tragedy in that is that making fun of anyone's accent results in people not trying. Mm-hmm. It results in people shifting who they are, hiding who they are, when it's like an accent is not a big deal. There's no moral implication of a person's yeah. accent. This uh-huh. is not, you know, even if it did relate to someone's educational status, I don't feel like that's a bad thing, but it also doesn't. So it's this idea of even now, kids, they very much internalize that, okay, a Southern accent, I sound dumb. The people mm. who are portrayed on TV, a Southern mm. sound foolish. They sound mm. uneducated. They sound clueless. Mm. And I think that feeds into the notion of, okay, I can't express this part of my voice, even though there's really nothing wrong with it. You know, yeah. I think it's an interesting thing because, I mean, it's good if your kid speaks their native language. It's good if you speak your native language.
I feel like what you're getting at is like, this is a part of who you are. This is your identity. And the thing that makes us ashamed of things like that, it's actually other people, right? And it's other people trying to use whatever they can to kind of get ahead. And that sucks, but that's kind of like a big part of being human is we tend to put each other down for whatever we can find, you know? And accent bias is just the latest thing that it's really hard to pin down. And it seems to be one of these things that's so pervasive that we haven't really shaken yet. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's in every country. But, you know, even with all the prejudice and bias, I think as someone who speaks more than one language and interacts mm-hmm. in multiple languages, I don't know that I would agree that the way I speak or my yeah. accent is a part of my identity. I would say that my accent describes me, but it doesn't okay. define me because it's true. Real, right? Mm-hmm. So it's maybe referencing where I'm from, mm-hmm. but that just means I don't have the skill set yet to yeah. hide where I'm yeah. from or to yeah. choose when to share where I'm from. Mm-hmm. So I know a lot of people in mm-hmm. the community do feel very strongly, especially a lot of immigrants and refugees, that their accent is who they are. And that's okay. We're allowed to disagree on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. If it's important to you, absolutely.
To say, no, I think it more speaks to where yeah. you're coming from. Because mm-hmm. you can change, you know, your childhood, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But your childhood doesn't define you.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a really good point.
I think that's kind of where I fall in terms uh-huh. of perspective. But I definitely think, yeah, there needs to be room for learning. And
yeah.
I think the big takeaway to me, obviously, this is interesting, but who cares that there's more American accents? Well, mm-hmm. it might help to diversify what you're listening to. It might help to try to do different accents. Mm-hmm. You can start recognizing, how are people saying this? Are all of my English teachers or all of the influencers online, do they all say it the same way? Because mm-hmm. the more you are able to pick out patterns and notice when something is different, that shows that you are improving in your English.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. And even if English is your first language, we're always improving, right? We're always like learning things. Hopefully we're getting better and noticing things that, oh, really? I never even noticed that. I was there the whole time, you know, and things like that. To me, it's endless, the amount of things that we can learn. And we don't have to be second language speakers of English. We can be just native speakers too. So no matter what your level is, you can get curious about these things basically at any time, you know, and the earlier you know about these things, the more you can pick up, you know, and the more enriching I think your experience is. For example, I know you speak Spanish too, and me, I'm also learning and living in Mexico. And I feel like all the time, I'm like, oh my God, I swear to you, I was just walking home just now so we could do this podcast episode. And I noticed the street that's parallel to mine. And I noticed for the first time today that I've been saying it wrong, right? And I had assumed it was, but it's not, it's Camacuero. And I just read the sign and I just stared at the sign thinking, did somebody just change this? Like, I've been saying it wrong this whole time, seriously? And I guess I never saw the sign written. And the first time somebody told me the name, I just assumed it sounded a different way because it sounded right to me. You know, it made sense phonologically to me that way. So I think in all the different Spanishes too. We can keep paying attention and keep learning new things, you know, and super interesting to me anyways.
I think it also pushes back against the idea of, you know, I love watching the reels where they say, oh, when one Latino meets another Latino and you get to talk about, why do you say words that way? Why do you do this? There is this camaraderie of, okay, your Spanish is weird, but it's still Spanish. It would be good for us to do that with English.
Yeah.
I get to do that with every language is that Nicaraguan Spanish is just as valid as Mexican Spanish. And the English in Massachusetts is just as valid as the English in Louisiana, okay?
Mm-hmm. But
the thing that would help is a lot of times if you are only taking in media sources, it's only certain accents. It's only certain dialects. And I get it. Hollywood, what needs to sell? But I think that's why resources and programs like the IDEA page are so helpful because it's good to get a framework of, okay, what do people sound like? Do I recognize voices in my life like that?
Yeah.
And I make that sound too.
Is there any point at which I'm having trouble understanding something that somebody's saying? And why is that? Is it because I'm not open enough to understand that, oh, this sound is just a variation of this sound, you know? And so, yeah, I think there's so many great ways that we can use that website, right? There's so many fabulous podcasts and things out there. And there's so many wonderful teachers like you that are out there too. And so you're in our teachers club. So we talk about this all the time. But for people who don't know you, because they're not in one of our clubs, can you give us a way to get in touch with you and tell us like what you're willing to do for people as well?
For sure. Well, obviously, I'm not going to be coming to heal your accent or fix your accent. But I think one of the best things that I get to do is I get to create an action plan with people who are immigrant professionals, non-native speakers. And the first thing we do is we have a little conversational assessment. And I am kind of assessing, where's your current accent? What are your current speaking habits? Mm-hmm. And how do they look compared to all the things that all the American accents have in common? Because remember, the accent, it's talking about how it's said most of the time by most people. So that's how I always like to start with my clients is you don't even have to work with me. If you just want to book a free accent assessment, we'll look at, okay, these are the three sounds or the two concepts that maybe you need to prioritize above anything else. And also, here are all the things that you are doing amazingly. So I think that's usually where I start. And then from there, maybe we do 10 weeks, maybe we do 12, maybe we work together forever, you know? Well, it kind of depends on the person and their situation. And yeah, I mean, I think we all need support, right?
Yes, exactly. Oh. Because like we said before, it's a skill. But if we haven't learned it, I mean, that's not our fault, right? But we can learn it. And sometimes we just need a little bit of help. So I think it's amazing that you're doing like a free assessment for anybody who wants to know, hey, some people are looking at me funny and they keep saying what, and I don't know what the problem is. Maybe just knowing those, hey, there is three things that if you can be a little bit more clear and here's how, maybe that's going to clear it up and people will just understand you better and you'll communicate better, you know? So I think that's wonderful that you offer that.
It's my favorite thing because then you get to decide on your own whether, okay, is accent coaching right for me or can I tackle these things on my own? Go do it. You have the internet. You have AI. You have a community that probably is speaking English.
Yeah.
So I'm there if you need more support. That's what accent teachers are there for. But yeah, it's about supporting you and empowering you, not about fixing you because there's not really anything to fix. It's just building your skill set.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. And people can find you. So we're going to put the link to get a free assessment down below. Woohoo! And also people can find that on your Instagram, right? You've got your links in your bio there. And if people want to get to know you, you've got tons of reels that I love to see you in your kitchen, you know, doing stuff in there. And that's mostly on Instagram, right? So people can also find you on Instagram.
Yeah, I have Instagram and LinkedIn. My LinkedIn is just my name, Haley Davis. But Instagram, I feel like it's much easier to find me. It's Fluent with Haley. And it's H-A-Y-L-E-Y.
I know, which you keep reminding me because I keep forgetting.
No. I have to remind everyone. I, you know, non-native speaker, native speakers, everyone spells it wrong. So it's not you. I'm not passive aggressively. You. It's more of, I'm just used to when I am doing a doctor's phone call or something, you know, and they say, "What's your name?" I always say, "Haley, Hayley," because it's just
spell it automatically. And I say that too, because I grew up with a name that nobody could pronounce, nobody could spell. So I'm used to that. Like, I automatically spell my name on the phone. And now I thought, woohoo, I'm moving to Mexico. There's tons of people named Bianca, right? Well, what happens every time I get into an Uber? They're like, "Oh, Señorita Blanca with an L," because they've got both names, and the I with the little dot, it looks like an L on the screen on the phone, right? So it's too small for them. And I'm like, this is the one place where I thought I would not have to deal with this. And yet, here I am, like every day dealing. I'm Blanca. Yeah.
So you would think that my name doesn't, obviously, if maybe you speak another language, maybe you're not sure how to say it.
Yeah.
But do you know what native speakers, specifically teachers, staff, professional people, if my name is on a printed piece of paper, do they say Haley? No.
What?
They say Harley.
What?
And let me explain, because you are wondering, that makes no sense. You're right, except for the fact that my last name is Davis.
Okay. Oh.
So Haley Davis, their brain tricks them and thinks about this motorcycle company called Harley Davidson. And the Harley is spelled almost the exact same as my first name.
Right.
My last name looks like almost all of the last name. So this has happened multiple times.
Wow.
And I remember just being shocked at the first 10 times. I thought, this is stupid. An R and a Y on printed paper in Times New Roman, they don't look similar. And then I finally realized that's why it's important, I think, to diversify when you're learning a language, accents, because there's cultural implications. You need to understand cultural implications.
You mean you're not a motorcycle heiress?
You know, I don't mind becoming one, but no, I wasn't born. I wasn't
Too bad. Oh, funny. Well, okay, so Haley Davis, and we've got your Instagram, a free consultation, you know, and we've got that link down below. And I just want to say thank you so much for coming again, because I love doing podcast episodes with you. Like you said, we're like, well, we're going to talk about these things. And then we kind of go off the rails and we bring it back around. But I think that's something that people like about podcasts. You know, they're folding their laundry, they're walking the dog, and they get to hear us, you know, really how we are, you know. It's not very scripted, and it's just for real. This is who we are. So this is very exciting. I will see you today. For us is Wednesday. I will see you tomorrow in our teachers club meeting.
So exciting. Yeah. Right. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. And thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you soon in the next episode.
Yes.
Bye. See you soon. Thanks again, everybody, for listening all the way to the end. And when you do that, I like to tell you a little personal story. I don't know if you know this, but I love going to coffee shops. And a few days ago, I finally went to one that had been on my list for quite a while. And when I walked in, I saw a refrigerator case full of empanadas. I saw shelves full of different kinds of alfajores. And I saw this drink called mate for sale. So I settled in for a few hours to work at this coffee shop. And I noticed from the owners that their accent in Spanish had a lot of kind of shh sounds when I was ordering and when I was getting the Wi-Fi password. And definitely Argentinian. So if you don't know that accent in Spanish, it's called Rioplatense Spanish. And it's a certain dialect that they speak down there that I didn't used to be able to tell the difference of among all the different accents in Spanish. But I think that's because I didn't learn Spanish in school. I only learned Spanish after I came here and moved to Mexico. But then when the owner brought me my little treats, he said something that really shocked me. He was like, "You're from Brazil, right?" And at first, I didn't think I heard him correctly, so I asked him to repeat. And he was asking me if I was Brazilian. So I asked, "Is that because of my accent?" And he said, "Yes." And I just really didn't know what to say. I was kind of shocked. I mean, even though I was really interested and I wanted to ask him, "Hey, what exactly made you say that? You know, what sounds or patterns?" But I was just kind of too much in shock to ask, because I was like, "Hey, okay, that's a new one for me." I mean, people can often guess that I'm not from here. I'm not from Mexico, even if they don't think I'm American, but they just think, "Oh, I'm just not from here." But nobody's ever said to me that I speak Spanish with the accent of someone who speaks Portuguese as a first language. That was new. So when I calm down from that, maybe the next time I go back, I'm going to ask him exactly what it was that made him say that. And then I can update you guys on that. So that's my story for today. And in the meantime, if you're the kind of person who likes talking about accents and language and culture, I want you to join my community. There are really cool people there from all over the world who love talking about this kind of stuff. And it's absolutely free to join. Plus, you get access to my monthly masterclass and a community-only event every month. There's channels for resources, podcasts that we're listening to, and even a behind-the-scenes channel where you can see what I'm up to in my daily life. And there's no obligation, so just use the link down in the description below and give us a try. And who knows, maybe you found your people. And if not, no worries. I'll see you in the next episode.